Welcome back to WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. We're at Fadley's at Lexington Market. We will be at State Fair next week. We will also be back at Jennings Cafe. You can find all of our work at Baltimore Positive, including our incredible 100th interview that we're doing here.
I'm going to interview you. That's the new game plan. Damie, you want to be there for that one.
I'm going to interview Nestor
on the 100th episode.
All right. Time is short. Theruvik Naraja is here. This is segment three. You have laid this out, and I've been to your website, and your website, you did a great job of laying out, all of the issues in an order, but the number that began with 300 in segment one, the number we're judged by, and that's another thing, that's segment four, is what the world thinks of us, but right here, right now, if we change this, we change the narrative of what the world would think about us.
So this is going to be the easiest segment, and Damie will mark this down, that we've ever done, because Nestor and I aren't going to say much. We want you to talk to the folks listening in their cars, watching on Facebook. We want you to walk them through their crime plan, your crime
plan. And I want to understand crime, and I want to understand gangs.
Yep.
You know,
I
was a little taken aback when Stephanie Rawlings Blake, after the incidents, they were like doing live cams with like gang members talking about their plan for the city. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, how's that going to go well? So we're 4.5 years later. The reason I'm doing this is because I'm unhappy.
Yep.
And after 30 years of being a citizen, having a condo I can't sell, and all of it, people don't really not buy my condo because the schools aren't good, although that's important, but they do care that they can walk in Federal Hill where I live.
Let me frame it this way. November 1994, 25 years ago, this month, there was an article in the Baltimore Sun lamenting the fact that we were racing towards 300 homicides again for the fifth year in a row. And back then, they thought if they just crossed their fingers and hoped and prayed that things would get better. I remember the article, November 11th, 1994, they're worried they're going to hit 300.
What was the solution then? Better policing? What was, you know, keeping criminals, locking people up?
Yeah. You saw the mayor.
Busting people for bags of marijuana? That was the plan, right?
You saw the mayor say, certain things are working. We just have to be patient. Well, they were patient, and they hit 300 murders that year, and they hit 300 murders the next year, and the year after that, and the year after that, and the year after that, and the year after that. Five more years of 300 homicides. I say that because you cannot assume that it's just going to go away by itself. It goes away because of actual policies. We have pledged that we will get murders below 200. And if I don't do it on my watch, because we talked about accountability, I will not run for re-election. That's how confident I am that we can do it. Number one, we were just there. It was 2011 when we had hit 197 homicides in Baltimore City, and we were not satisfied, but we had at least achieved that. I was a prosecutor in Baltimore City. After I got back from my clerkship with Justice Breyer, I was a federal prosecutor, city prosecutor in Baltimore, and then deputy attorney general. And what we did is some of the foundation of what I proposed to do. Number one, 12 neighborhoods account for 26% of the murders every year. We're going to do simultaneous wiretaps.
12 neighborhoods,
26%. I know we promised not to say anything, but give us that.
I'm going to say that. I promise you.
12 neighborhoods, a quarter of the murders happen in those 12 neighborhoods. We know where they are. We know what can work. It's not arresting every corner boy. It's going in and doing a proactive investigation. In Cherry Hill, we did this 700 days without a single shooting. In Greenmount East, 24th and Barkley, which is where we announced this plan, if you draw a 5-block radius around that corner, there were 52 homicides and shootings in the 5 years before November of 2013. That neighborhood went 18 months without a single murder, not one, because we did one case, one wiretap case, to get the gang leaders, the shooters, and the killers off the streets. Not every corner boy, not every child who's doing the serious killers, you get them off the streets. That's strategy number one. 12 of them all at the same time, we're going to have...
Now, how do you know the difference?
Oh, you do wiretaps. You literally hear them talking about, we got to report to this person. We know who the killers are. We prosecuted the executioner for the Black Gorilla family. We did it because we knew that he was being celebrated underneath a camera by his whole gang. It was not hard to figure out who was the leader, who was the shooter, who was the killer. And so you do long-term investigations. We make all of those arrests right before the killing months of May, June, July, and August. Every year, Don, we have this surge of violence in the summer. At the end of the summer, everybody's lamenting what has happened. What are we going to do? We start a case. The case ends in November, and then we hit repeat. this time, we're not going to do it in response to the Summer of Violence. We're going to do it in anticipation of the Summer of Violence. So we extract those killers from those 12 neighborhoods in April of 2021, within 4 months of me getting into office. Strategy number one. Number two, on May 1st, I announced with the U.S. attorney standing next to me that the mayor of Baltimore for the first time has asked that every carjacking, commercial and bank robbery and felon in possession case that happens in Baltimore City is subject to automatic federal review. Those are the cases that the lawyers will know are subject to automatic federal jurisdiction. They automatically implicate interstate commerce. So those cases can go federal. Number two. Number three, we're going to launch the aerial surveillance program. Now, the way that we did it a few years ago here in Baltimore, indefensible. You did it without public comment. You didn't tell anybody. You had police officers and police commissioners, you know, not telling the truth to the public. Terrible.
Stop there. What's the benefit of that? Tell me there's a blimp flying around, and I've read a lot about it, quite frankly, but I want you to tell me why, as a citizen, I don't have any problem with it. I'm not breaking any laws. If they catch me jaywalking, looking at the phone, picking my nose,
but you
scratching my back, whatever I'm doing,
you
that's public,
you want
it's fine.
To know why it's a crime-fighting tool.
Absolutely.
Yes. I sort of get what the doorbell, the Amazon doorbell video, right? Like, in a city like this, that's a pretty obvious, as long as the light, that we fixed Amy's light down here, 311, Jack, come on down, fix the light out here on the backside. But if there's light...
Let me tell you exactly.
Light alone, people do not want to commit crimes in light or where they may or may not be seen or videotaped.
Over 50% of the murders happen during daytime hours in Baltimore City. You put this camera, this surveillance plane above, and what you do is you see dots on a map. When a murder happened when I was a prosecutor in Baltimore City, my cops would go to the corner, they'd look north, south, east, west, see if there's any cameras, they'd go review those cameras, they'd watch it for 8 hours, hoping they catch a glimpse of someone or something. That's what they do in the past. With this technology, you'd see the dot that committed the murder running 3 blocks south, 2 blocks east, 3 blocks south, and you'd overlay the ground camera map on top of it, and you know exactly what cameras they went under. By the way, not just after the murder, but before. Before they were even ready to do something, where they were hanging out. You can't rewind.
See where they came from.
That's exactly right. And now what you're going to do is present to a jury that is skeptical of cops, that is reluctant to hear, reluctant witnesses.
This is the honest guy not lying. It's like a football camera.
That's exactly right. And juries expect and demand and deserve that kind of concrete evidence.
I would love to know that when my wife walks to the CVS to get her meds.
Yeah.
And it's a little dark this time of year at 4:30, 5 o'clock, that she could walk down there, that if anything were to happen to her, God forbid, that the son of a bitch wouldn't get away with it. You know what I mean? Like that, whatever crime that is, whatever, for anyone that's like my wife or our child or my friends or my neighbors, I don't have a problem with that. And I get that anyone who is... they would say, well, that's how the Nazi thing started. Because I took that position on a Facebook thread with, I don't know, Jack Hogan, I don't know, a couple months ago. And, you know, the haters come out. Look, you got to have skin like an armadillo
Absolutely.
To do this,
right?
Period. But there is the other side of, hey, the world's already into my lunch. Google knows where I am every minute.
Don, Nestor, you're not the only ones that are okay with this. 75% of Baltimore is okay with this. 80% of African Americans in Baltimore are okay with this. Why?
Reverend Hathaway just commissioned a poll. Yes.
That's right. And the reason for that, in part, is because last year there were 309 homicides. Only 12.5% of them resulted in an arrest. Hundreds of people are committing
whoa,
murders.
Whoa! Give me that number again.
So the clearance rate in Baltimore City.
So I got an 86% chance of if I get murdered, there's an 86% chance they're not going to find the guy to kill me?
They're not going to arrest or prosecute the guy that killed you. That's right. In Baltimore City, in Baltimore County, they had 107% clearance rate. They solved virtually every murder and a few murders from the previous year.
Yes.
Right?
Well, what's the difference between what you're doing and what... How is it that they solve these things in Baltimore County?
It is a complicated question.
It involves witnesses, probably.
I'll
give
you
one.
I'll give you correct. I will give you one response to that, and I'll be curious as to Theroux's take on it. It is why we've worked so hard over the years in Baltimore County to maintain trust between the police and the communities they serve. We talked about that in the beginning. It's why, and I've tried to explain this even to my conservative friends, it's why President Trump's assault on immigrant communities is so dangerous, because it drives them underground. Because the police, who are proud of their clearance rates in Baltimore County, congratulations to County Executive Ishevsky, Chief Hyatt, everybody involved out there, but the police would be the first to tell you they can't do it without community cooperation. Now, that's my take.
That is a part of it. But let's be clear. Even when things were working, when I was a prosecutor in Baltimore City, nobody was knocking on my door saying, Mr. Vignaraj, I want to be a witness in your murder case in open court in Baltimore City. We had to work those cases hard. And we worked with cops
and witnesses then get murdered.
It happens once in a blue moon. It happens too often. It is terrible. But what we need is better tools. We can't rely. We need this aerial surveillance program. One of the next ideas is actually to spread 10,000 ground cameras across Baltimore City by giving a $100 rebate to every residential and commercial property holder that registers that camera with the police department.
Be a part of the community. That's right.
And this is not Big Brother. This is a private surveillance network. If you don't want the cops to see it, and by the way, that camera above is only going to be used to investigate homicides, shootings, and carjackings. It's not going to know which church you're going to or whether or not you're littering. That is not what this is for. This is for serious violent crime.
Not unlike programs that we have in cities and other places to give folks smoke detectors.
Correct.
Make them safer.
That's right. That's exactly right. And this is private residences that are signing up for this. Guilford has this. Patterson Park Community Association is having it. But there's parts of the city that aren't getting the protection that they need. And this is an easy way to do it. And by the way, each and every one of these things has never been done before. And there are no other candidates that are advocating for it. For the first time, we're going to clear the burglary crime scene backlog. Right now, we don't test burglary crime scene evidence. That's terrible because a graduate of Woodlawn High School who helps run the forensics lab will tell you that 40% of DNA and fingerprints from the burglary crime scenes hits off the federal database. You've got people in the federal database that are committing burglaries in Baltimore City, and we're not even testing the evidence. Some of those are going to be first-time offenders. They've done nothing else wrong. Throw it back. I don't worry about that case. But you've got people that are committing carjackings and shootings and homicides that aren't being caught for those, but we could catch them for the burglary, and I can prosecute.
It's a way of life, though, right? It's not you don't commit one burglary and think, dream it up, get away with it, and say, I'm going to stop.
That's exactly right. And the more that they commit, and now that they know that they're not even testing, they're not investigating, we took all the burglary detectives in Baltimore City and put them out on patrol last summer. And by the way, this is why I'm so frustrated when your city leaders say it's not my fault. You have made decisions, and you have stood idly by when decisions were made that have hurt our city, that have hurt our police department, that have hurt our communities, and now you're trying to wash your hands of it because it's election season. It's embarrassing.
Walk us through the other highlights of your plan. I want the folks who are listening.
Well, I want to hear about
the police, too. One of the things we're committed to in this show is to give people information, not just to be making things up willy-nilly, but listen to what folks are saying about solutions. So walk us through so our people in their cars can understand your crime plan.
And I'll say two things. If you are skeptical that we can't get it below 200, if you think I'm just another politician that's promising some fancy goal that can't deliver, do me a favor. Go to through2020.com. Go look at the End the Bloodshed report. There's a 2-page short summary and a 27-page long report. Read whichever one you've got time for, and then call me and tell me you're still skeptical, because I bet you won't be. Because every single one of these things has a level of detail and precision, a timetable, a budget to it that will make you confident that this isn't just another politician that's coming in and promising. This is not what I do. I'm a prosecutor. I walk before judges. Judges ask me questions, and I give them direct and honest answers. That's how I was trained to do my job. Let me tell you, I'm just going to read the headlines.
Yeah, please, walk us through it.
Cold case initiative, okay? We're talking about cold cases that involve high caliber weaponry, 10 or more casings at a crime scene, and headshots. Last year, 57% of murders in Baltimore City involved fatal head wounds. It was the highest in the country. The people that are committing those murders are not first-time offenders. They are serial killers. They are people that are doing this over and over and over again. They're using 40 caliber weapons. They know that the surgeons at University of Maryland, at Shock Trauma, at Hopkins, can fix these folks up if they only shoot them 6 or 7 or 8 times. So they go over and they look at the body, and even though it looks dead, they put 2 more bullets in the head. That person needs to know that that murder is not going to become just another red ball on the wall that doesn't get attention. It's going to get focus from lots and lots of agencies. anonymous monitoring of juvenile cases and identifying a non-public list of repeat juvenile violent offenders. Right now, juvenile crime is through the roof. And one of the frustrations is our public doesn't even know what's happening to these cases. We see the kid commit a carjacking, and then 2 weeks later, we see him again committing a carjacking, and people are confused. We have to respect the confidentiality of these kids. There's no question about it. They are young offenders. There's no question about it. But if you're 16 years old and you commit a carjacking, automatically you're charged as an adult. That case can be confidentially listed on my website so you can know when's the next trial date? What's the outcome of that case? That also has been never done before. We're going to create an office of
I've never been a victim of crime in the city because I would be a real MF-er.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's
like,
right.
Someone comes up and carjacks my wife, I'm going to want the death penalty. Like, literally. I mean, I can't imagine the anger I would have if there were no repercussions for finding out that the kid did it to Linda, his wife, and three other people. That's unacceptable.
Let's be very, very frank with your listeners about why I'm doing this. I'm doing this because I want to hold the feet to the fire of the people that are dropping the cases, that are not building strong enough cases. We're going to create a deputy mayor for public safety. Don, you'll appreciate this. We actually had shoulder to shoulder with us former police chief Jim Johnson. And I said to the audience, we're going to create this deputy mayor because we want somebody who has got an experience that and a record that we're proud of. And we're going to appoint someone like Jim Johnson to that position. Now, I was proud to have him then share it with the audience and with the media that this is a crime plan that is visionary and actionable and could actually drive down crime. Do you know why I'm so appreciative of him being there? Because he did it.
Right.
Over the course of 10 years, there was a 25% reduction in violent crime. He brought women and minorities into the police force. He was, you know, recognized by President Obama for his visionary leadership. We need leaders like that in Baltimore City. And I can't be afraid of having somebody more experienced to my left or right, even on the issue of crime, which I think I know as much as anyone about.
And to Jim's credit, one of the things I was always the most proud about in Jim was he was a national leader on common sense gun safety
legislation.
That's
exactly right.
He didn't shy away from that issue. Right.
We keep going back to the gun.
Get the guns off the
streets.
The
gun's what you shoot the people with. The gun is the weapon of choice. Where getting the guns away from where's the plan on that?
Look, the prosecutions of criminals in Baltimore City for gun possession are rarely the guy doesn't have a record, but he got a gun too easily from some market. The people that we prosecuted, that I prosecuted as a federal prosecutor, as a city prosecutor, were felon in possession cases. These are people that gun laws did not apply to. They got guns even though they had a record that they could not have done.
Well, that's what you're making the NRA speech now, right? You're making the speech for the right side to say, well, the bad guy's going to get the gun anyway, so I have to have a gun.
Let's be clear. Sensible gun regulations is absolutely essential, and Maryland has a lot of the leading laws in the country. That's not solving the problem in Baltimore City. Mm-hmm. Because in Baltimore City right now, you've got to prosecute people for felon in possession of guns. And federal prosecutors, when I was a federal prosecutor, we took people that had used that gun in a murder. We couldn't prosecute him for the murder because we didn't have jurisdiction over the murder. We prosecuted him for the gun case.
Theroux, how does this fit in?
Yeah.
And again, we're going to have you back on.
I'd love that.
Because you obviously, there's a wealth of ideas. How does your approach to this crime-fighting plan fit in with the whole discussion nationwide right now of criminal justice reform?
Yeah. You will notice that none of what I'm talking about requires mandatory minimums or mass incarceration or zero tolerance or cash bail. We are one of only two countries in the world that still have cash bail. It's an abomination that we still have it. We don't need any of that. We're talking about smarter, fewer, better cases. Cases that have rock solid evidence, that are using smarter strategies, that are resulting in fewer arrests. But fewer arrests of the violent repeat offenders, getting them off the street and keeping them off the street. What you're hearing is about management, an office of the public advocate, a deputy mayor who's responsible, who we're going to hold accountable, just like you're going to hold me accountable for making sure that the crime problem is being driven to the gun. We're talking about a college cadet program where we go to our local colleges, our HBCUs, and recruit them back to Baltimore and say, guys, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to come to Baltimore and serve in a noble profession, be part of the next century of policing. We're going to train you in implicit bias, in de-escalation strategies, in community policing. Come be a part of the solution, because what a proud job this has always been and could be again here in Baltimore.
I'm going to jump in. I'm breaking all our own rules. About a couple months ago, someone wrote an op-ed. Actually, I have it. I'm going to have them on the show at some point. An op-ed piece in the Baltimore Sun, taking your idea and taking it down one step further. He said, we have, in our high schools, we have magnet programs for everything else. Let's create a public safety magnet where we have potential firefighters and police officers.
Or wood shop
and train
or
these kids so that when they come out at 18 and graduate, we now have them. They've been trained in the right way, and we have a pipeline of qualified folks.
We at least know they had a citizenship program.
Right. That's right. And by the way, that pipeline is really important. The reason I focus on the college cadet program is those folks can do an internship the summer before their senior year, do a cadet program their senior year, and immediately become officers upon graduation. We're talking about $51,000 a year with health benefits and a pension. That's an attractive job to a person that wants to serve. We need to recruit the right kind of people back here. We have diversion programs to make sure that people that are charged with low-level offenses and juveniles that need a second chance get an actual apprenticeship and an actual job by somebody who will hire them. Fadley's has made that pledge real, that we're going to give people second and third chances because they deserve that. We cannot have 73% of people come back to Baltimore City and re-enter that pipeline. We have all of these ideas laid out in a way that is supposed to inspire confidence, because leadership is not just good sound bites and good speeches. You know, one of the things that Barack Obama taught me by watching him, he was the best orator of a generation, but he wasn't just saying lines on a page. He was sharing ideas. He was communicating solutions that people could wrap around. He was respecting the audience well enough that if they actually cared, they wouldn't turn the TV off. They would go and research and learn. I think this city is desperate for change. We heard this line that we're using a lot, which is out with the old, in with Theroux. And the reason it's working so well.
Maggie, did you come up with that?
I haven't heard that one yet.
Maggie's shaking her head over there.
Maggie thinks it's a dad joke.
Well, I want
to
say,
but that's exactly what we need to do. We need to sort of usher in a new era of solutions.
You know, we'll have another conversation between now and the end of the
And I want to say, you know, Nestor and I are very clear that we want to interview everyone that's running for office. Heck, I may be interviewing Nestor about that one day. But I do encourage everyone who's listening, everyone who's watching, to go to Theroux2020.com, not because it's an endorsement, but because you need information to make an
informed the difference between you and
the other candidates.
And what the newspaper thinks and what anybody at a university would think or people that write books think. Yep. There's a lot of philosophical depth to this. Yep. This is not a one-hour program fixing Baltimore.
Yeah. Look at all the candidates. Now, you know, we have to have some fun at the end. Yeah. I can't let you get away because I know you sometimes, over the issue I bring up, must feel like you've been fighting with your hands tied behind your back. The whole world wants Adnan Syed released because he didn't do it.
I got a friend that hates you.
He's
going to be upset that I'm standing next to you. And if I didn't ask you, I'm glad you asked this.
And I know you are convinced.
She's like, you're with that SOE. And I'm like, I'll ask him. I haven't watched the podcast.
I know because I've talked to you. You are convinced that you guys had the right guy. What was wrong with the podcast? What didn't the podcast tell us?
Let me say two things. I am freer to talk about the case because it has been resolved by the local courts. But I will start by saying what I said in open court, which is the only thing I used to be able to say. I said, look, what is popular is not always just, and what is just is not always popular. And my job as a prosecutor on that case or any other case was to always do what is just. For anybody who thinks that we were relentlessly pursuing someone where there wasn't evidence, I would just ask him to go read the Court of Appeals decision or the concurring opinion by the Court of Appeals of Maryland that laid out the evidence in that particular case. Every elected state's attorney in the state of Maryland signed an amicus brief that said, be wary of allowing the media to shape your impression of a particular case. Here is the crushing evidence of guilt that was presented in that case. Look, it's hard. If we have joined cases where there was evidence of actual innocence, that's my responsibility as a prosecutor, as a public servant. You know, before I took an oath, I took a pledge that we delivered justice for all, right? It's hard because it's the job of public officials, it's the job of prosecutors, the job of our leaders, not to do the things that are popular, but to do the things that are hard. And over the course of my career, I've never shied away from that. On that particular case or any other, there are plenty of people, including the Court of Appeals of Maryland, that think this was a just conviction and a just result. But my job is not to answer to podcasts or to popular opinion. My job is to do what is right.
I was one, as Nestor said, he has a friend that gets worked up about it. I was one of the few when the podcast was all the rage, and I was never popular at parties or when I was at the dinner when friends say, what'd you say? I said, I got to tell you, if I were on the jury, having listened to the podcast, I would have voted guilty, and people would be outraged. The one question, because we'll be criticized if we don't ask it, my friends always beat me up. They say, but there was an alibi witness that they ignored. What do you say to that?
Look, there is hundreds of pages of briefing that explain the state's position on that particular issue. All I can say is, go read the Court of Appeals opinion, because it answers this very question.
You're comfortable. You're comfortable.
And look, the podcast was an incredible piece of entertainment.
Right. You did listen to it?
I did. I listened to it before I was involved in the case. It happened at Woodlawn High School.
I know Lincoln Park. We know all we know the sights and scenes.
But my job is not to make decisions based on a podcast. The prosecutors, the attorney general's office, the folks that have looked at this, their responsibility is to look at the evidence, to look at the law, and to do what they believe is right. And in this particular case, by the way, the courts don't always agree with us. In this particular case, the court have agreed. Now, that doesn't mean that isn't room for disagreement. I think people of good faith can disagree. But we have a system that allows these disagreements to be sorted out in a meaningful way. I know this got a lot of attention, but you don't change your view just because of public sensationalism.
Just because it's on HBO.
Right? You got to try to make sure that your North Star, that your compass is the same, no matter if it's hard or no matter if it's hard.
I'm trying to do that with this impeachment, even though I know he's guilty. So I'm trying to do that.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's exactly right. And I will end by saying this. God, if our leaders could, on every question, just say to themselves, let me not worry about what gets me reelected. Let me not worry about what the polls say or what sound bites sound good. Let me just do what is right and just and will help the people of Baltimore. Can you imagine what a different city we would have? That's the kind of city I'm trying to help create.
What a great place
good
to stop.
Good citizen. Thoreau Vigneraja, running for mayor.
Thank you, Don. Come back.
Yeah, I will. I'd love that.
Thoreau Mayor 2020. You can find all that out about him. We'll be having him. I have a feeling you'll make some splash between now and April 20-something.
That's right. Out with the old, in with
Thoreau. It's okay, Maggie. It's catching on.
we're going to help it catch on.
There you go.
I'm Nestor. He's Don. We're Baltimore Positive, signing off from Fadley's in Lexington. This is the part we get to have a crab cake. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, WNST, Baltimore Positive.